T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
In addition to that batting average away from home, the American League's best at .335, for whatever reason, Baines hit .341 against left-handers.
Whoa.
Look out! This game is tied, and it hits the facing of the roof. That is your major tape measure job. We saw Reggie put one over the roof here a couple of years ago. The last guy to do it was Lou Whitaker, of all people, last May off Bert Hooton. This one might put the White Sox in front. Kittle goes deep. Back-to-back homers. It's 2-1 Chicago. For Baines, his fifth. Now Kittle with his third.
Middays on the Score.
That indeed, Bob Costas doing play-by-play for the 1986 White Sox back-to-back home runs by the Hall of Famer Harold Baines and this man, Ron Kittle, who is on Twitter at Naked Biker, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Kitty, how you holding up, man?
I'm doing good. I'm quarantined on my own property, and I'm loving it.
Well, it's good to hear, and it's a long story as to how we got involved in trying to do a deep dive here on the 1986 White Sox, but you're the perfect guy with whom to start, because this was the year that Hawk Harrelson took over as general manager. And I remember one of the first things he did was he decreed that the fences be moved back at Comiskey Park, because in his words, he said, our thumpers can hit it out of anywhere. And you were definitely one of those thumpers. And then, instead of playing you in left field, he decided he was going to experiment with Carlton Fisk in left field. He was also going to use a Rule 5 draft selection on a young man named Bobby Bonilla, who was going to play some left field as well. What was your perspective going into the 86 season?
You know what? As soon as he got that job, it was like a big question mark in the sky, because, you know, he was very flamboyant. He should have never got the job in the first place, and he'll be the first one to admit it. You know, I think he got that job in the barge room having a few cocktails, but, you know, we go to spring training, it was all about Hawk. It wasn't about the players. You know, he put on his cowboy hat, and I just talked to Harold like 10 minutes ago, and he goes, remember when he had his name on his uniform pants that he would wear in spring training? So it was a clown show to begin with, but you still got to go out there and play baseball and, you know, try to do as good as you possibly can. And you want to win for yourself and the team, not for the general manager.
How do you win ball games with a clown show going on?
That's really hard to do. I mean, we had some decent players. You know, Hawk brought in Mo Drabowski, Dick Allen, and I remember this. You know, Dick Allen, obviously a great hitter in Chicago. Trust me, I followed him. I knew what he can do. Harold Baines, Greg Walker, myself, and we're in a batting cage, and Dick Allen was the new hitting coach, and he had a cigarette in his mouth, and he went into the batting cage with a cigarette lit. He flipped it to the side. He took five swings, hit five line drives, picked up a cigarette, and said, that's how you hit. And he walked away. We never saw him for another 3 days. So, you know, and I'm going, so, you know, me being a smart ass, I picked up another cigarette butt, and I went in the cage, and I walked up on the pitching machine. And Sammy Hairston was pitching, you know, using the balls in there. And I walked up, like, every 5 feet I would hit. And, I mean, I was hitting the best I ever hit. Harold said, you should do that in the game. Just walk up on the pitcher. But, you know, it's, you know, there were more photo shoots with Hawk than there was good batting practice or anything else. It was just everybody, they're all nice people in baseball. You know, Mo Drabowski, Dick Allen, great people. They were just trying to make everything, put in a mixing bowl, and hopefully it worked. And unfortunately, it didn't work. and I wasn't healthy. I left spring training with the worst shin splints I've ever had in my entire life. I hit the ball great. I had a poor average, hit some home runs, and I wound up getting traded on an iconic day in Chicago.
Not only did you end up getting traded, the story of the guy for whom you were traded is fascinating, because in December of 85, Britt Burns was part of a trade to the Yankees that netted them the Joe Cowley, not our friend Joe Cowley, but the big pitcher Joe Cowley, and catcher Ron Hassey. And then later in February, Hawk trades Ron Hassey as part of a multiplayer deal to the Yankees to bring back Neil Allen and Scott Bradley. And you'll hear Scott Bradley's name coming up in a second once again, too. And then you go back to the Yankees, and he gets Ron Hassey back. What was the obsession that he had with Ron Hassey?
Well, Carlton broke his thumb. So he wasn't catching or throwing the ball at the time. We needed a catcher. There's no doubt about it. Hassey was left-handed, so that was a bonus for his character right there. You know, that kind of all started when I was on second base, and it was called Turn Back the Clock Day. We wore the old vintage uniforms, and Jeff Thornburg was the manager. And I hit a double. I think I got an RBI on it. And Steve Lyon comes out and to pinch run for me. He goes, I'm pinch running for you. I think it was the first inning or second inning. And I said, BS, you get your butt back in the dugout before I kick your butt on the field. So he runs back in the dugout. Then Thornburg brings him back out. He goes, no, we're pinch running for you. So I knew something was up. You know, that's just how that season was going. You bring it up to other Joe Crowley. During the early part of the season, they bring a basket for your laundry, your towels. You know, a clubhouse guy throws it in there, you know. And somebody come in there and said, hey, anything you want to go to the minor league, put in there. So Tom Seaver lifted up Joe Crowley and threw him in the bucket and said, take his ass. I mean, that's basically, you know, I don't think Fish should have ever been out in left field. You know, matter of fact, I was DHing that day. The first ball that went to him, it almost hit him in the face. And he comes in, and I could picture just now, he was flipping off Hawk Harrelson up in the suite while he was going back in the dugout between innings. So, I mean, it was a mess the entire time. You know, you never like to get traded. It was probably a blessing in disguise for me, but I never got to saw Bobby Bonilla play, so I couldn't tell you much about that.
We're talking with Ron Kittle here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're starting one of what I hope are many deep dives into the 1986 White Sox season. Ron, you mentioned getting traded. Was there anywhere in you some relief about going away from what you already kind of called a clown show here with the 86 Sox?
No, I didn't really. I wanted to go out there and win. I wanted to do good. I mean, I was hitting above 200, you know, I was really hitting the ball good, right at people. And, you know, that happens. I mean, you're not going to get hits when you hit it right at people. I think I had like 16, 17 home runs or something and wound up finishing second on the team, and I wasn't even there the rest of the season. But it's one of those things that you don't need distractions from up in the press box. You need to have the distractions in the dugout, let the players take care of it, and you go out there and play. So it was a mess all around. It wasn't fun, you know, but like I said, it was a great experience for me going to New York, playing for the Yankees with some great ball players and, you know, seeing what it is. And every team just wants to win. It doesn't matter what team you're on. They want to win and they want to do well. That's how baseball is.
The other significant occurrence was the firing of Tony La Russa. That was the guy that had led the 83 White Sox, and you think that he's going to get a little better chance than that 26-38 start, but there he went. Doug Rader gets two games before Jim Fregosi gets the reins that year. So what were your thoughts when La Russa was let go?
You know, if I remember right, and I'm pretty good at it, Hawk wasn't trying to get rid of Tony La Russa. He was trying to get rid of Dave Duncan. The pitching coach, because he wanted to bring in Mo Drabowski. And Mo's been working in a tavern for the last 40 years before that, and doesn't know anything about does he know pitching? Probably, but he didn't know the current players. And Tony stuck up for him. You get rid of Duncan, I'm gone. And that's exactly how it happened. And, you know, I said my piece to Hawk a little bit. I kind of blanked and moaned a little bit, and he goes, don't worry. And, you know, that's just a sign that, don't worry, you're gone next. And that's about how it all happened.
Did you guys sense, I mean, it sounds like you sensed that at the time, that this was an argument going on in real time. You guys didn't find out about the Duncan LaRussa Harrelson connection afterward. You felt it while it was happening?
They did it on the tarmac at the airport. We were going to the airport. We were flying out of town.
Wow.
It was done that quickly. Well, you know, Fisk got traded when he was in Cleveland. I got traded or got released. Fisk got released in Cleveland. I got released in Detroit. You make these decisions to do things when you're out of town so you don't have the local media all over you. You know, you understand that. I know you do that. You're in the radio industry.
Yeah.
Nothing you want will happen at home. It happens somewhere else. And that's kind of how the story went. But, you know, I had some great teammates. It was a lot of fun. It was an experience. I moved on, went back. I came back to New York, you know, from New York to play against the Sox. It was fun. It's just a game of baseball, and you got to move on. But I'm going to tell you what, it was a circus show there for a while.
You mentioned the name Tom Seaver early on, who could obviously be sometimes an irascible clubhouse presence. Then later on in the year, after you were gone, and I don't know exactly why and how this happened, but Whitehawk decided to add, in the middle of August, he adds George Foster and Steve Carlton, of all people, to this team, which is just, you start reading through these names, and every next one, you can't believe it. I mean, I'm looking at the roster, you're seeing those guys, and there's Kenny Williams' name. There's, and Connor noticed this, Nick Capra was signed as a free agent who became, you know, part of the organization for decades after that.
You know, when you're the boss, you make moves, big names, that makes you feel a little bit more important and popular. You know, instead of going down there and get Roomba Zimba or whatever the guy's name is that nobody knows. So George Foster, Steve Carlton, great guys. Over their prime, they come in, and Hawk was looking for a miracle. He was literally looking for something to make what a mess it was get a little bit better. Jim Fregosi, awesome guy. Love playing with him. Before I got moved on, it was pouring down rain one day, and nobody wanted to play. I mean, I'm a mutter. I'll go out there and play for you, Jim. You know, you just go out there and play. If I didn't feel good, I was hurt, I still wanted to play. And see, that kind of hurts. So if I ever had to play back part of my career again, I would let myself heal up before I went out there and did something, because I wasn't thinking what the future would hold. I just wanted at that time to go out there to help my team win a ball game.
How long would you have needed? Like, if you're going back to whether it's, you know, 84, 85, 86, Rod, and telling yourself, you know, from the time machine, you need to sit down, how long do you think you would have had to sit in order to have that healthy season?
Well, in 85, after, you know, my rookie year, 84, I think it was, I jumped into the picnic area of Old Sox Park, and I dislocated my shoulder. I picked the ball up, threw it into Scott Fletcher, and it popped back in the joint. So I'm done. They shot me up with about 15 shots of cortisone. I couldn't lift my arm for ungodly amount. I went down to AA to do some rehab for a week. I did really good. I came back up, and I think I hit 26 home runs the second half of the season. And it was tough, because I really should have, because I'm paying for it now. I mean, I can't do hardly anything without my shoulder being calcified. I went to arbitration with it. It was ugly. The doctor stood up for me and said, no, he should not have played for the next 3 months. But, you know, I'm a young kid. I want to play. You know, I mean, can you blame me? I want to play. I felt sometimes when, even if I was sick or hurt, I could still get better than somebody else. And that might not be true, but if you take that attitude out of anybody who's a professional athlete in any sports, they're going to struggle. You got to go out there and say you can compete, but yeah, it's a mess. I got a bump on my shoulder to this day, and thank God the doctor, Dr. Corzad, stuck up for me and said, this man should have been in a splint traction for 3 months before he even went out and played, and they just let me play.
We're talking with former White Sox slugger Ron Kittle here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, and I mentioned before that the name Scott Bradley came up. Scott Bradley was traded by Hawk Harrelson to the Seattle Mariners on June 26th. They received a player to be named later. Then on July 1st, the Mariners sent that player to be named later, Ivan Calderon to the White Sox. Now, we all remember the arrival of Ivan with his, you know, the gold chains hanging out his hairy chest, his shirts all unbuttoned. And for whatever reason, I just gravitated to him. I loved his style. I loved watching him hit. He was a better athlete than he looked like he would be. He made some miraculous catches, the famous one in Tiger Stadium. There was some others that are memorable. But that was my dude. What do you remember about that brief time you spent with him?
I'm going to tell you what, I loved him to death. And what of the opening day, I think I played with him again in 89. So we're in California. This is a great story if you got time to listen to it. So it's opening day. We're playing the Angels out there. Doug Rader's the manager on the California Angels. So I'm up there to get to bat, and I hit a home run the previous time up there. So Ivan's coming up, and the pitcher – remember Bob McClure? He was a left-handed
sure.
pitcher. He's pitching to Ivan, and he throws a curveball to Ivan 50 miles an hour, and Ivan gets hit in the leg with it. I think the ball hit him and just rolled down his leg, and Ivan started to yell at him, so he takes his helmet off and throws it at Bob McClure, but the helmet gets caught in his stomach, comes back and hits Ivan in the head. So Ivan thought the pitcher hit him. So all of a sudden, the brouhaha came out there. And, I mean, what do you got to do? You got to go out there and fight for your team. It's a brawl. So who's coming out to the going to fight? Doug Rooster Rader. And I go, oh, my God. So I tackled Rooster. I knocked him on the ground, and all of a sudden, people are pying on me. And, you know, and I'm sitting there like, I said, don't step on my glasses. And Rooster's on top of me. He goes, Kitty, if I would have known that was you. He goes, I'd have started kissing you on the face. You know, just team respect. You know, but he threw his own helmet and hit himself in the head. And I couldn't have not stopped laughing more than I could. But
that's
I remember he played hard. He had like 5 pounds of gold on him. I don't know if he ever took a shower, but he washed the daylights out of his gold chains to keep him clean. And he was prepared to play every single day. You know, sometimes you didn't see him during the day up until game time, but he was there to play. Unfortunately, he was killed down in his home country, and, you know, it's all over with now.
You know, I ran into a guy in a bar who managed Ivan Calderon in Bellingham, Washington, in short A. And he told a story. He said the press box for the Bellingham field where they played, highest point in the city, that anywhere in that town you could see when you were up in the press box. They said they had a game that was about to start. It was like a 4 o'clock start or something like that, and Calderon was nowhere to be found. They had no idea where he was. So somebody in the press box yells at the manager and says, he's coming. What do you mean? He goes, I see him. And so he goes up to the press box, and Calderon is completely shirtless. He's zipping up his pants. He's wearing penny loafers with no socks, and he's sprinting as fast as he can down the middle of the main street in Bellingham to get to the field in time for the game. And when I've told that story to people who knew him, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I totally believe that.
Yeah, I've been in that press box in Bellingham. I know how tall it is. And I've seen Ivan like that many occasions. He never wore a T-shirt under his jersey. I mean, if he could have played naked, they would have let him. He would have played naked. It wouldn't have bothered him. But he still would have had his gold chains on.
Kitty, let me ask you one last thing about the Doug Rader, whose name has now come up twice. You said that Rader was the manager of the Angels. He was also the interim manager in 86 before Fregosi took over. Now, the Red Rooster, I'm told, had a habit, and I got to be careful of how we describe this, but I was told that anytime there was a birthday cake that might be sitting out in the clubhouse, he would leave a little present on it that was just sort of his thing. Is that true?
You know, I'm going to plead the fifth on that one, but
okay.
I'll plead this one. He's manager, and we got our butts tallywhacked one day. I mean, it was a bad tallywhack. So the guys were hungry, you know, they get fed now by professional chefs. You know, they're eating, they can eat anything they want any time of the day. I mean, we were lucky to have a chicken wing from Chicken Willie Thompson. So we had a big old aluminum thing of spaghetti. I'll never forget this. We got our butts kicked. And all the players, after the game, they were running up to go eat. You know, and they had money, but we didn't make the money they have now. So Rooster comes in that locker room, and he takes off his uniform pants, and he's in his jock strap. And my locker is the only one that can see into his office. So he's on a ramp. He goes, "You guys want to eat?" Not counting all the words he said beforehand. He jumps up on the table, and he sits in this big old platter of spaghetti. Yep. And he doesn't say it. Nobody says a word. They kind of just sit down. And I'm in my seat. I didn't even go in the lunchroom. And Rooster's in his office. And I'm looking at him, and he's cracking up, and he's pulling spaghetti out of his butt crack.
Oh, yeah. Man.
He couldn't stop. He had tears in his eyes. So, you know, the coaches were right next to him, you know, where the old coaches, you guys were never in the ballpark over there. I had tears in my eyes for the next hour. I got tears in my eyes now thinking about that story. And at least to say, nobody ate that day. But, you know, he is probably one of the best baseball minds I've seen. He's like a Mensa. I mean, he's super intelligent, strong as an ox, great ball player. And you know what used to make him mad is when Terry Bevington came over, and Bevington couldn't remember his name. You know, if he's one of your coaches, you got to remember the guy's name. You know, and I think, you know, he's resting down in Florida right now, probably having a great time in life. But I still picture Rooster with spaghetti hanging out of his butt.
Kitty, I could do this all day. I mean, seriously, I could absolutely do this all day. This did my heart good.
I remember everything in detail. I don't want to. This head is so full of useless stuff. you know, former players that I play with, they ask me, and I tell them, and they said, "How do you know that?" They said they couldn't even remember what they ate for breakfast. I don't know. I've always had that observation in my head. But, you know, it was sad that Tony left. And I've heard Jerry say this many times, that his two biggest regrets was hiring Hawk and getting rid of Tony. And I'm sure Jerry would attest to that. And they're great friends to this day because of that stuff. And, you know, Hawk's in the Hall of Fame now, so c'est be.
Well, this is all this stuff in your head, far from useless today. This is absolutely wonderful. I'm glad we did it. Ron Kittle, thanks so much, and good health.
Thank
to you.
You, Ron.
All right. Have a great day, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, my God. My stomach hurts from laughing.
My
abs
pain.
Actually hurt.
I am in so much
so
pain
great.
Right now.
That's so great. If that is the start to where these discussions of the 86 White Sox go, then this bodes very, very, very well. Coming up, we are going to open up the magical mystery jar.
No.
So you don't want to miss. Yes, we are. You don't want to miss this. Bernstein and
McKnight. Full of Doug Raider's spaghetti.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Jars. Camp and the Mexicutioner have brought the magical mystery jar out from its special closet. They are undoing the seal from the jar. Yes, and our friend, the reanimated Egyptian priest, has given it the blessing as well to make sure that we are protected and that the gods are with us. And it is time to find a topic that you sent in. What you do is you go to @Bernstein_MCK and you get in the DMs with ideas of things you want us to talk about and things you want us to have thoughts on. This is all for you, so let's reach into the jar.
All right, Jim sent this one in. So I've been saying my favorite baseball term for 30 years. I'd been calling Punch and Judy hitters a Punching Judy hitter. What is your favorite phrase that you've been saying wrong for a lot of your life?
Oh, God, that's good.
Oh, wow. A Punching Judy hitter. That's hilarious. Well, it's kind of gross.
It's not good.
It's not what you meant.
It's not what you want to do.
I don't have any off the top of my head that are my own. I do have the argument that I had with one of my best friends over an idiom.
Okay.
That we argued over for a long time. He believed that, you know, the idiom make ends meet. And mm-hmm. We were talking about the song Lady Madonna, Children at Your Feet Wonder How You Manage to Make Ends Meet.
Yeah.
He insisted that the idiom was taking the ends of a roast, like that you would otherwise discard, and making them meet, M-E-A-T. How do you manage to make ends meet? And I kept saying, no, it's ends, as in the end, two ends of a string that you're trying to tie together. To make these ends meet, M-E-E-T. And in the pre-internet era when we would spend entire summers together in the North Woods, that was an ongoing argument that I think I now have finally won.
That's a good one. You've met my friend Pete, right? He was down in Bourbonnais. And I bring him up. I've known him my entire life. He is an English teacher. I was an English teacher for a while. And there are two phrases that he and I have argued about for way longer than is necessary. One is, and you tell me, is it a bold-faced lie or a bald-faced lie? And is something clumsily done ham-fisted or ham-handed?
I've heard on the first, it's bald-faced lie.
No,
bare-faced. Yes,
bold. It's bold-faced lie.
No, it came from bare-faced, brazen, bare-faced, meaning you're not putting a mask over it, and that became bald-faced. It's not bold-faced lie. And I've used both ham-fisted and ham-handed, depending on which one felt more correct.
So we argued about it for years, obviously, because, you know, both of us being English teachers and huge nerds, you argue about this stuff. But the real answer is both work for both phrases and mean pretty much the same thing. Bold-faced lie is a phrase and can be used. Same with bald-faced lie. Same with ham-fisted and ham-handed. Although I got to tell you, ham-fisted is a lot more fun to say than ham-handed, and you know why.
A fist, which is more fun to say.
Of course it is.
It's more of an impactful sounding word. I think bald-faced, even though bold-faced may be because of usage, sort of like the fact that irregardless, which is awful, is almost accepted, and the misuse of literally is accepted because it's used. I think the actual correct term is bald-faced, no matter how it's evolved. So there.
Also, could and couldn't care less.
Yes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, that a lot of people misuse that.
Yeah, in like 99% of uses, you could not care less. Couldn't.
Correct. Correct. That is used interchangeably, and most of the time that's wrong. I could care less. Yeah. All right, reach in again there, Rick.
Outside of the office, when someone asks you to describe a score caller, how do you describe them?
Wait, can you read it again?
What, outside of the office, so when you're not speaking with us that already have a good idea.
Yeah.
When someone asks you to describe a score caller, how do you describe them?
Huh.
I don't think I have one blanket way of doing so. I think in general, we always used to, Terry and I used to say that the typical score caller was somebody who would have the time and desire to call a sports radio show. Therefore, it automatically has to be an absurd human interaction. But then you hear like Grobstein callers,
yeah,
who I think are in large part aliens. So I think it depends on the show and depends on the situation. And it's changed over time. Like a 1990s sports radio caller is different, and every show has a different kind of caller. So I guess I used to look with more disdain, I think, than I probably do now, because everything's changed so much.
That's all true, with the exception of Bears Mondays.
Well said.
Like if I were describing callers, I think I would use the nuance you have, and say, you know, every show has its own kind of caller, and every kind of conversation is a little different. Sure, there are some things that make a lot of callers the same. Like there's the guy who claims, here's what nobody's talking about. There's list your credentials guy. There's, you know, there's all sorts of commonalities between callers. But on Bears Monday, it's that guy. I have friends who, yeah, I mean, everybody knows I went to high school in Wisconsin and college there too. So all of my friends were Packer fans growing up, even though I hated that franchise, and my friends for the most part. But they would, without, like, no joke whatsoever, all of my friends would, you know, they'd finish a Packer game or something like that, and undoubtedly they would win because they had Brett Favre. And when the Bears lost, from Green Bay, from Appleton, they would tune in to Ed and OB doing the post-game show because they wanted to hear Bears callers, and they would listen to the score as Packers fans for the day after Bears losses calls.
Is that OB the best way I can himself? Use?
What's that?
Yes. Yes. OB yelling at himself. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working through the COVID-19 pandemic, including healthcare professionals. Thank you for helping keep us safe. Let's grab another one there, Rick.
I'm sure this one will be a hoot. Who's your favorite historical person pre-1900?
Well, that's easy. That's easy for me.
That's easy for you. Born pre-1900? Died pre-1900?
No, I've talked...
Pre-1900.
Okay. I've talked about it before. Mm. As an intellectual exercise, if you're ever bored... And it's just like if you're driving and you're looking for something to do. I always think, how would I explain this to Abraham Lincoln? Like if all of a sudden Abraham Lincoln, poof, he's sitting in the car next to you. And first of all, he's like, what is this thing? What is this horseless carriage? The reason I use Lincoln for this thought exercise is because he's modern enough to understand some of it if you explain it well enough. He's obviously immensely intelligent with, you know, having been, you know, a lawyer. And I mean, the guy is, he could get it if you explained it to him, but just how he would perceive all of these modern things and how, and it's sort of, how could you reasonably explain anything right now to Abraham Lincoln were he to appear in a way that he could understand it?
That's interesting. That's interesting. I like the connective tissue between, you know, eras and understanding that, yeah, like Abraham Lincoln understands gunpowder and its
right.
effects on society. Like, I get that and different kind of engines and stuff. I would go more ancient world. The question was fascinated by, right? Like, not necessarily or favorite, right? I don't have to endorse the
favorite
politics or the
don't say stand. Hitler. Don't say Hitler. Yeah. Oh wait, no, that was
Hitler.
Too late. Yeah,
don't right. say Hitler. Right. Yeah, here's what nobody's talking about.
Right. Let me tell you one thing.
Who was our football? Who was the football coach who wasn't fired right away for explaining to fellas that he wanted Hitler's motivational strategies? For his football team,
right?
Who was that asshat?
I forgot his name, but he's fired, and that would be too recent anyway. So, don't say Attila the Hun, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know that guy's making a distinction between 1900 when it comes to finding any way to shoehorn Hitler's motivational strategies into his football film sessions. I just don't. I don't think that's happening. Oh God! I mean, how do you not say Alexander the Great? Like, how? I mean, that's just, he conquered the known world all before he was 25, and then suddenly died. I mean, that's I'll use the easy one for the go-to. I'll take Alexander the Great.
Okay, because you could have gone, you know, King Tut. There's a sure. lot of ways you could. Leonardo da Vinci. Pretty interesting, probably over a meal, over a glass of wine.
Yeah, probably a couple of glasses of wine if you're hanging out with Da Vinci. Why not?
Good stuff. We will do more of that tomorrow. We do it at 11:20 when we open the magical mystery jar. Again, Bernstein_MCK. Get into the direct messages and supply us with whatever you want us to talk about. Now is when we do Who Am I? And for the first time today, this is going to come to us from the world of basketball.
Ooh.
Okay? The world of the NBA. And I will let you know, I'm going to give you a couple of clues here. I played my entire career with the same NBA team. I played between ages 22 and 33 from 86, 87, up through 97, 98. So I retired the same year, in fact, that Michael Jordan did.
Mm-hmm.
The entire career with one team. I played in 796 games, so a very durable, reliable player. I played in 98 playoff games. I was a two-time NBA all-defense second teamer. One season, I led the NBA in steals. I am a current NBA head coach. And I ask you, who am I? We will reveal the answer after a brief timeout on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I gave you the parameters of our daily trivia game, Who Am I, before we went to the break. 796 games played, all with the same team, 98 playoff games, a two-time NBA second team all-defensive player, a one-time NBA steals leader in a given regular season, and a current NBA head coach. Who am I?
So I think I know it. But I'll admit that it's not by virtue of his playing career, and instead by the mere fact that he's an NBA head coach. Let me go through my reasoning, and I know Rick wants to go through his, before you announce whether or not I've nailed it. I happen to know that between, what was it, 86 and 98, right? That was his playing career?
Yep.
I happen to know that it's the only guys that led the league in steals, well, not the only guys, but the guys that led the league in steals are Pippen, Jordan, Payton, Stockton, And then Kendall Gill, like the year after that, because I've talked with Kendall about it, but I don't think that was in the playing career. And Kendall obviously didn't spend his career with an entire team, nor is he an NBA head coach. I don't know the guy's career all that much, but I know that Nate McMillan is the head coach and spent his whole career with one team. That's my guess. I know Rick has his.
That's the same as mine.
Okay, fair enough. Is it Nate McMillan?
It is Nate McMillan. Nicely done. That is okay. The answer today to who am I. We've had some really difficult ones lately, so I like to kind of vary the difficulty of some of these, and we're going to go with all different sports and all different things here. But I think doing John Hadle wasn't quite fair to you, because you'd never heard of the guy. As much as fun as we had with it with his cards.
Right.
But yeah.
Not fair, but hilarious. Give me I don't remember Nate McMillan's career at all. Give me a player comp. Help me out.
According to Basketball Reference, his most similar players career-wise regarding, and they do this through win shares. These are some of the names on here that compare to Nate McMillan. Michael Cooper, Vinnie Johnson, Jameer Nelson, John Lucas, Dick McGuire, Jeff Malone, J.R. Smith, Darren Collison, Antonio Daniels, and Tyrone Corbin.
Wow.
But my memories of Nate McMillan, having covered him in some of these playoffs, and just as a relentlessly competent player. Just, 6'5", played a little point guard, a little off guard, could guard anybody, just always there, always played super hard, just a remarkably reliable, competent player.
All right. That makes sense to me. The comps are kind of all over the... Well, I guess not all
they
over
are.
The place, but there are a couple, like Collison, that kind of help pinpoint the guy a little bit. That's good. That's a good who am I.
Yeah, because the NBA was a different place. We kind of got into this when we were talking about the upcoming documentary on the 97-98 Bulls, and all the isolation ball that was played, and what it meant to be a good individual defender then, and what you were allowed to do, and how that changed the isolations back when they were calling illegal defense, and you were isolating on an entire side of the floor with somebody against somebody else, where you looked for. When you were getting your playoff roster ready, it was like looking for bullpen help, where you were always trying to get somebody you could trust in an isolation that you wouldn't have to help immediately, like a two-dribble helper instead of a guy immediately, instead of having to send a body over there to try to trap the ball away, where that guy could stay in somebody in a star player's way for two dribbles, and maybe if you're an outstanding defensive player, maybe even three dribbles. That had value like a high leverage bullpen arm when you were optimizing your playoff roster.
Speaking of play styles, I don't know, have you seen the press release from the NBA and the Players Association and 2K Sports? The NBA 2K20 player tournament is going to happen. There are 16 NBA players who have all signed up to participate in a 2K league. Oh, it's going to be more of a tournament. And I wonder, I think the fun part here is the names that are going to play, and wondering if they're going to play like they would play. You know what I mean? So, for instance, Kevin Durant is going to be the guy, going to be one of them involved. So, obviously, he's going to play with the Nets, and he's going to run everything through Kevin Durant. Trae Young's got the Hawks. Hassan Whiteside has the Blazers. Donovan Mitchell's going to play for the Jazz. Devin Booker, Andre Drummond, Domantas Sabonis, DeAndre Ayton, DeMarcus Cousins, Michael Porter Jr. Rui Hachimura is going to play. He's the Wizards, sadly. Patrick Beverley, Harrison Barnes, Derek Jones Jr., and Zach LaVine is going to represent the Bulls in this 16-player NBA 2K tournament, which means, will Zach LaVine be calling timeouts the way Jim Boylan calls timeouts in his NBA 2K tournament?
If he has any sense of humor, if he really has any sense of humor, absolutely yes. Because what a dry martini it would be if he did stuff like that. And where you really had to be like a Rick Camp level Bulls masochist to appreciate him taking sarcastic timeouts. You know, how great would that be?
Ryan Arcidiacono in the starting lineup. Right? When you set your lineups, you got to have Archie Diacono in there.
He's also guarding the best player on the other team.
The entire time. In fact, Zach, like the troll job is Zach doing the player lock on Ryan Arcidiacono and only playing as Arcidiacono with everyone else running around him. He's got to pull himself out after a three-pointer that he makes to tie the ball game. Like that's... He's gotta get into that level of hatred.
And then when he's out, he's gotta forget that he's on the bench, like forget that it's time to put him back in.
Yep. That's all gotta happen. He's gotta leave someone helpless lying on the floor injured, and when wait for the other team to call a timeout.
He's gotta try and lift him. 15 guys.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
He's got to call timeouts for guys running ATOs down 17. The tournament starts, I guess it's Friday, April 3rd, from 7 to 8:30. They're going to air the thing on the quarterfinals are on ESPN2. The semifinals and finals are on ESPN. I think most of the tournament, though, airs on... I know it's streaming, but it also might be on NBA TV, or some of the games might get picked up on NBA TV.
This segment is brought to you by Denny's. Denny's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Order your favorites from Denny's at Denny's.com. Pick it up or have your Denny's favorites delivered right to your door with free delivery. You're hungry. Denny's delivers for free. Order now at Denny's.com. See, I think it's more fun if guys don't play their own characters and play something that they're not. Because we always used to joke about it when you would see, you know, warm-ups sometimes, certain, you know, college teams where you have all the guards are having a dunk contest and the big men are all having a three-point shooting contest. That's changed now that sort of everybody does everything. And I always laugh when my kid did the My Career on NBA 2K, and he started off and it was like this guy looked like Matthew Dellavedova, and it's like, you know, this tiny little point guard. And he does the whole My Career, and he starts over. And I go downstairs, and the guy's like, 6'11", dreadlock, tats. And I said, what happened to your other character? And he said, I got tired of being a white bum. And I said, well, you're going to have that the rest of your life, so you might as well use the to be something you're never going to be. So I would think that maybe, you know, let Levine be Ryan Arcidiacono and prove what you can be.
Yeah, I actually, reading through the release, I don't know that players are going to be stuck with their actual teams. It might be, I mean, they have the player ratings in the press release. Rick, I don't know if you've seen anything more specific on this league. And I was wrong. I apologize. It is going to be, the entire league is going to be on ESPN or ESPN2 or I guess their streaming option and maybe even ESPN3, I guess, if you have it. But I think the quarterfinals for sure and the semifinals and finals are going to be on the Deuce and on the network there. So I don't know where the regular season games, quote unquote, the regular games are going
to
actually
I would think they'd have to play with their own teams because that's kind of a bad look if you don't.
It doesn't say that they have to. What would be cool, obviously, who the hell cares if anything's time consuming right now, but what would be cool is if they did the fantasy draft option. And Jay and I actually toyed with this idea when we started the MLB The Show League, which I am terrible at and will not win a game in, is actually letting the rosters, you know, kind of opening up all the players to be draft eligible, and then you go through team by team and have a draft. That way Zach could pick zero current Bulls for his team and play the wish season that he never got.
Or you give them plausible deniability and say, hey, you can, the only team you cannot play with is your own team.
Oh, that'd be a good way to do it too.
So then you could maybe,
yeah, that's almost like the NBA GM survey.
Yeah
then you prove your overall ability. I like what the 312 has to say here via the text line. Levine has to punch the time clock before he starts playing the game.
I forgot the time clock.
We can't. Oh. We can't ever forget the time clock. How about the fact that Ron Kittle invoked Terry Bevington today, too?
So great. That is so, so great. Ron Kittle.
Yeah, we.
If you missed that,
my God.
You can use the radio.com
app. Rewind.
Yep. It's absolutely fantastic.
I hope they'll find a way to get it all set for you via the podcast, as they usually do, and Ray's usually good about that. But make an appointment. I don't even, if you're a baseball fan at all, you don't even have to be a Sox fan. It doesn't. We did this ostensibly as part of our deep dive into the very odd and sort of wild and woolly 1986 White season, but the stories are absolutely timeless. And same goes for yesterday. Did you see Wonstedt and Tony Wise stuff with McNeil and Parkins?
Yes. Fantastic.
My God. Yep. Yeah, so maybe before the week is out, we'll bring some of that stuff back, because that was when we got an open spot here or there. I know that we're also our buddy Dan Durkin of The Athletic wrote a really cool piece about the actual schematic changes that the Bears can make now that Nick Foles is their quarterback, and what they can do to make the best of him. And he's going to be joining us Friday at 11 to go through his description of what the Bears' schematic changes, what they can do to maximize Nick Foles. It's really football-y stuff. So looking forward to that as well.
Awesome. Tomorrow we're going to have a conversation with Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal. He's got a book coming out in just a little, a couple of weeks, I think. We'll be looking for something to read during your stay-at-home social distancing. He's a fantastic baseball writer and a guy that's been really inside with a lot of the TikTok, I guess, of how baseball has had to change their plans and alter them over and over again amidst everything going on with the coronavirus.
Thanks to our producers, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, and Ray Diaz. Thanks to our guest, Mike Florio, and the irrepressible Ron Kittle. Thanks to Shane Reardon and Mitch Rosen for helping us soldier on through this. Thanks to everybody for listening. And we look forward to being with you again tomorrow. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Practice social distancing. Make sure that you are listening to doctors and only people who listen to doctors. We'll be back tomorrow. Lawrence Holmes is next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.